Welcome. This is EconoDay's Economist Roundtable. I am Ann Picker, EconoDay's Chief Economist. Jeremy Hawkins, who covers the UK and Europe, and Mark Pender, who monitors the US, are with me today. Earlier this week, the Bank of England announced that it had received permission to reduce its monetary policy meetings each year from 12 to 8. This follows a recent trend with other major central banks. In just the last year, the ECB reduced its monetary policy meetings from 12 to 8, beginning in 2016. And the Bank of Japan reduced its announcements, in their case, from 14 to 8. Of the major central banks, now only the Reserve Bank of Australia meets 11 times a year, with January off for summer break. The question arises, is this a good thing? Is less more? Jeremy?
I think I'll go along with it being a good thing. I guess the starting point really is why they have the meetings in the first place. Presumably that's with a view to announcing any changes in policy, and indeed why those changes have occurred, and also to provide some form of forward guidance about its future path. Now, does that require a monthly meeting? Well, my best guess would be probably not. And indeed, I go so far as to say, should it actually be monthly anyway? I mean, monetary policy supposedly works with these so-called long and variable lags. And so short-term tinkering shouldn't be on the table in the first place. In addition, I say that, you know, looking at the monthly data themselves, they tend to include a lot of what they call statistical noise. And it's not always that easy to try and determine what the underlying trend is, purely looking on the basis of just 4 weeks or 5 weeks worth of figures. And central banks, of course, are supposed to react to changes in underlying trends, and that really needs a much larger data set. And indeed, I suppose, I'll just think on a related note, the sheer volume of statistics now available to the authorities means simply that the central banks need longer to digest it all. And I suppose that was one of the factors which was mentioned by the ECB chief Mario Draghi, when, as you mentioned, the Central Bank of Europe started contemplating switching to its current six-weekly gathering back in 2014. So in a nutshell, my view is that the latest move out of the Bank of England is very sensible. What about you, Mark?
You covered a lot there. I would say the short-term tinkering is an interesting point. That is during a stable environment, of course, and sometimes we can get volatility, such as the China thing, and then you can get conference calls in between the meetings, and that, I guess, those are semi-emergency situations, which when they do occur, stir up the market quite a bit. And so an advantage of having more meetings is that you can have a volatility in the market and still have a meeting coming up without having to do those emergency phone calls.
If I can interrupt then, let me play devil's advocate there.
Sure, please.
Because just going back to the ECB, when Draghi was talking about contemplating the switch, one of the points of the rationale given at that stage was the fact that we're in a period when there's nothing happening to interest rates and we don't have to worry about non-monetary measures and the like, then whether you have a monthly meeting, a weekly meeting, a quarterly meeting, it doesn't really matter because people aren't looking for anything to happen. But when you're in periods when there's at least a realistic possibility of a change, then you get the problem whereby the simple fact that you've got an upcoming monetary policy meeting tends to create unnecessary or added volatility in the markets as speculators start contemplating a move at that meeting. So the higher the frequency of the meetings, the greater is the additional volatility caused.
Well, that's a good point, yes. But again, if you're not so much coming up on an expected move, but you have an exogenous development that occurs or something like this, where central bankers like to be reserved and they don't like to necessarily stir up the pot. And when such a thing would happen, an emergency meeting or an intermeeting or these kinds of things are very troublesome. But I can see what you're saying. It's a give and take. Another issue, I think, for the U.S. side is transparency. We went through 20 years of Alan Greenspan very reluctantly moving toward more transparency, and if you recall, it wasn't, well, I guess it was quite a long time ago, it was a generation ago, I guess, when the central banks, they didn't have to have a meeting to change rates. They didn't even have to tell anybody anything. The interest rates just changed, and banks would have to tell you, and the pundits would have to tell you that there was a change. So the more meetings you have, the more transparency you have. Is if, for instance, they're pulling the FOMC meeting, FOMC minutes, now just weeks, and we're having one coming up from the last meeting in April. And that used to be a huge time delay in these things, which created a mysterious, unknowable quality, which gave work to people in our business. But so the more meetings you have, the more transparency you have. And I think right now, I think people are it's not an issue. Transparency in the U.S. is no longer an issue. You don't hear complaints. I think Bernanke solved all that. So I think right now, 8 meetings a year for the U.S. side is, I think, just right. I don't think that there's any trouble to this. But there is one little side I'd like to note, that the chair's press conference, which happens every other meeting, can be a sore spot, and as it was last year, the implication being that they won't act unless they have a meeting where the chair can then explain the move in detail. So that has changed and altered expectations. And then it's the same thing with an emergency meeting now. If a meeting that doesn't have a press conference, then if they have to schedule a special press conference, something that they haven't done yet, well, then that would raise all sorts of trouble. So there, the question of a conference. Now, Draghi, Jeremy, he gives a conference. The ECB head gives a conference after every single meeting. Is that right?
Every single meeting. That's right. And indeed, it's become the case now whereby, you know, when rates, okay, they have moved occasionally, but infrequently. And it's got down to the stage where, you know, the actual press conferences themselves become almost more important than the actual announcement on interest rates. So that raises the issue then of trying to make sure that during the question and answer session that you don't make the kind of, without being unfair to him, I think the faux pas that Draghi made a couple of meetings ago when he kind of undid some of the good things which have been said in the official statement at the Q&A. There's just too many opportunities to not say exactly what you mean at any particular time.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the opinion of transparency in the ECB? And then, Anne, what's the transparency in China? I mean, in Japan, and if there is any transparency in China. But first, Jeremy, what about the ECB?
Well, the ECB, I think they're getting there. I mean, it's been a slow process to get any kind of minutes out of them whatsoever. Clearly, they still come out far too late to be of any real use. And I think the bulk of a transparency in the ECB now comes as a result of individual statements made by ECB council members, Q&As at any kind of international meeting or something like that. So, I mean, they're getting better. But to be honest, I don't think in terms of, if you look at a scale of 0 to 10, I'm not sure where you'd put the Fed, but the ECB would probably come at least a couple of points behind. What about your side, Anne?
I should talk about the Bank of Japan a little bit. And when they were meeting 14 times a year with the press conference following each meeting by the head of the Bank of Japan, there was really no new news, because at that time, meetings could be as close as 2 weeks and 3 weeks. And, you know, how much data is there to absorb in such a short period of time to give more focus? The 8 meetings does not appear to be having any effect on their clarity, on what they're trying to say. It seems to the reduction of meetings has had really no effect that I can see on the information available from them. And again, I think the speeches by key board committee members, Bank of England, Fed, Reserve Bank of Australia, all have done a lot to illuminate the process of making monetary policy decisions and the opinions of the policymakers that go into these decisions. Shall we go on and talk about what's new beyond central banks? Jeremy?
Sure, I'll just pop right in with, you know, we had the employment report last week here in the U.S., and it came out, payroll growth was on the low side at 160,000, but we had a little uptick in average hourly earnings, and so the overall look right now for the U.S. economy, I would say, is we're having some early indications in the second quarter. We have retail sales coming out Friday, which will be a key first indication on the second quarter. It's probably we're going to be upbeat a little bit for the second quarter, certainly better than the first quarter. The employment report, the labor market here in the U.S., even though we had a little bit slower payroll growth, still 160,000, still well above what's necessary, 100,000 to, according to Yellen, to absorb new workers. The economy here, it looks to slow, but it looks to maybe pick up a little bit in the second quarter. I think that's the look from the U.S.
Jeremy?
Okay, yep, from the European side, I suppose really one of the issue warning, really, I suppose I get a bit cautious about what's happening in European manufacturing at the moment. You remember a couple of weeks or so ago, we were talking about how the manufacturing PMI is pretty well right across the Eurozone, and were really far too pessimistic compared to the hard output data coming out from the national statistics bodies. What we've seen over the course of the last week or so is the update on the March industrial production data for likes of Germany, Italy and France. They've all been disappointingly soft. Typically, they've been accompanied by downward revisions to the February data as well, which means that tomorrow, when we'll get the Eurozone industrial production figures for March, they're going to be probably certainly on the soft side of original expectations. And that's going to at least raise the possibility of a downward revision to the preliminary flash estimate of Eurozone GDP, which people may remember showed a 0.6% quarterly rise in the first quarter. So we got sort of a negative contribution from first quarter industrial production going into GDP. There's also been some question marks over recent developments in the consumer sector as well. So it's going to be interesting to see where this growth, 0.6%, was generated in the first place. We won't get figures on that on Friday. We'll still have to wait a bit longer. But I've got a few question marks about just how reliable this 0.6% really is.
Any questions on the strength of the euro? Comparative valuations and currencies is a big topic right here in the U.S.
It is. I think a lot of people here are kind of sort of just given up almost trying to determine what makes the euro move. I mean, we've seen the quantitative easing, we've seen the cuts in interest rates, you know, compared with obviously the yen. And yet those currencies have both tended to appreciate apart from the last week or so against the dollar. So I think it's a moment, it seems as if FX markets are still being in large part driven by, you know, thoughts about where Fed policy is going. If something comes out to make people believe that, okay, we are going to get 4 Fed hikes this year, then I think we'll start to see euro dollar heading back down again. But for the time being, it looks like it's found some kind of a flaw.
Hey, Ann, I have a question about the yen. I'm seeing all sorts of comments now about the weakening. Is this a factor? Are they concerned now? Have they switched their concerns?
The yen is a problem for Japan. The higher the value, it impacts their export industries negatively. So the finance minister this week has picked up his rhetoric and threatening intervention, even though G7 is on the horizon. And talked the yen down a bit yesterday, but it appears to be rising again today. It's certainly not functioning as a currency that mirrors the economy's performance. GDP for Japan will not be available till the end of next week, so we don't know what the first quarter looks like, but all it should be probably close to zero or negative in my eyes. I think we should call a halt there. Thank you, everybody.